I was both surprised and honored when the pastor called me and asked me if I would speak today. And I was like, wow, you want me to speak for Mother's Day? Oh, I would love to. And then after I hung up the phone, I started thinking, how do you even begin to talk about Mother's Day in a sermon? And I'm like, what am I going to? Well, I thought, it's okay, I can do this. And then as my week went from bad to worse, and I'm thinking, okay, you can do this, Sherry. But, you know, do you realize how many aspects of motherhood that there is to talk about? And I could probably keep you here all day long just talking about mothers. Yeah, I'm not going to. It's okay. It won't be all day long. But I did come up with a story of Salome in the Bible, in Matthew. And as I studied it, I found it very interesting, and especially the perspective from which this story come from. I did learn, I want to tell you this, that we hear a lot about women in the Bible and how in Bible times, women were not really considered worthy people. You know, they were lower. The husbands could tell them what to do. You know, they couldn't own lands. They couldn't do this. They couldn't do that. But something that I learned is that one job that women had in Bible times that was considered of utmost importance was that of being a mother. And it helped me understand why there are stories in the Bible of women who are desperate to have children because they're barren. It's because so much importance was placed on children and the mothering of children. And I thought, wow, how have I missed that? I've heard these negative things about women, but you know what? They got this right. If there is one job that women ever have that exceeds any other job, that is being a mother. True, all women are not mothers. Some women choose not to be. Some women cannot be. But there is something special to the calling of being a mother. My little bag actually is for my little props for the sermon, boys and girls. I'm sure that every mother has something similar to this. This is a little box where it has wonderful little keepsakes from over the years. Here's a little piece of paper that my son left for me. I wrote the date on it, fall 1998. Mom, I need you to do me a favor. Please pray for me. Kept that in my little box. Now that same son, boys and girls, this is something when you're thinking again of Mother's Day, how many of you do little homemade cards? That same son gave me this card a couple of years before. Arteries are red, veins are blue. If you were dead, I would still love you. That was on one side. The other side does say, roses are red, violets are blue. Mom, I really, really do love you. So I guess he thought about the first one and decided he needed to work on that a little bit. So anyway, this is my little box. It has more than kids. It has mementos of friends and things. But I also have how many of you moms have these? Oh, I see lots of hands going up. How many of you moms? Oh, yeah. I pulled out my little box and I went back just, I'm not sure how far. But this is quite a collection. These are actually not all Mother's Day. Some of them are birthdays, but they're beautiful cards. Here's another one. Homemade card. Again, kids, moms love homemade cards. As you can see, we keep them forever. You know, dear mom, I hope you have a happy Mother's Day. I love you very much. I'm glad you went through all the trouble to take care of us. I love you very much. So cards are just so special when it comes to Mother's Day. I find it interesting how we go from the little homemade cards, and I have in here to the little humorous cards, until we get to the point of the beautiful, well-versed cards, when our children really start understanding what mothers go through and do for them. There was another lady who felt that mothers did not get the recognition that they deserve, and her name was Anna Jarvis. Anybody here familiar with Anna Jarvis? Anna Jarvis is actually the one who was instrumental in getting Mother's Day to become a holiday, because she felt that mothers deserved to be recognized more than they were. But a funny thing happened. Anybody care to guess what happened to the holiday of Mother's Day? It became very commercialized. And as wonderful as all the cards are and all the gifts are, again, moms, what is it that we really want from our children? We want those hugs and those kisses and their love and their admiration. And Anna Jarvis realized this. So at some point in time, when she realized how commercialized the holiday had become, she incorporated herself as the Mother's Day International Association and actually went out and protested Mother's Day to try to get it removed from being a national holiday, because it had gone to the complete extreme she didn't want. And this is what she was quoted as saying: "A printed card means nothing except that you are too lazy to write the woman who has done more for you than anyone in the world. And candy? You take a box to mother and then eat most of it yourself. A petty sentiment." So Anna Jarvis had a good intention in realizing that mothers were not recognized like she thought they should be, but unfortunately, it was not developed the way that she hoped that it would be. Mothers, I found this saying, and I'll have to say that it probably is the nutshell of what motherhood is all about. There is within most mothers an unconditional, almost desperate love for their child that begins often before birth and never ends. This love is universal, and it transcends borders, cultures, and continents. Like a fierce mama bear protecting her cubs, many mothers are willing to risk personal suffering, injury, or loss to keep their children safe. What intrigues me about this is, those of you who are mothers, what was it that you felt during those last few hours of pregnancy? I hear a snicker. I bet the fathers can even answer that. What was it that mothers felt? It's a little four-letter word called pain. Pain. And I remember it very well. And I remember the second time that I was expecting a child, that it suddenly occurred to me that I was going to experience that pain again. And I remember thinking, no, I don't want to do that again. And I must have verbalized that, because someone said, "I think it's too late." And so not only did I do it a second time, but a third time. And you have to ask yourself, if it is that painful, why do you do it? But there is something that happens, and I don't know the medical aspects of all of this, but there is something that happens that once that baby is born, that pain somehow shifts into euphoria of the miracle that has just happened. And the pain is all but forgotten until the next time. But I remember the first child and that miracle of life. And you're just like, wow. Until they laid it on my stomach and I went, ew! It's icky. No one prepared me for the icky part. But then they clean it up and they bring this baby back to you. And again, it's euphoria. It's just like, oh, and you look at all the little fingers and you look at all the little toes. Yes, boys and girls, it's hard to remember that you were once that tiny and you had little tiny fingers and little tiny toes. And moms would count them every one and go, oh, it's a perfect baby. It didn't matter whether your head was pointed or your head was square. It didn't matter how little long legs you had or how chubby you were. You were the most beautiful baby. And all mothers feel that way. There's something that happens from that moment on that a bond is connected between that mother and that baby. And since I'm speaking from the mother's perspective, it would be interesting at Father's Day to hear about that. How does that bond happen? You know, when the mother actually takes it and the baby's placed in the father's arms, do they too realize that miracle? You know, do they realize what has just happened and a bond develop? I don't know, but I do know that for a mother who gives birth, and I will have to say that because we live in a sin-filled world, unfortunately, all mothers do not respond to being a mother in the positive way. And that's a sad, sad thing. But those who do feel that bond instantly with their children, it will never, ever be broken. It does not matter what that child does. It will not ever, ever be broken. But one of the things that us mothers have a tendency to do, which leads me to the Bible, Matthew chapter 20, a mother's request. And we're talking about Salome, the mother of James and John. And when you study about them, it says that Salome was thought to be the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. Again, so much of the Bible we don't know. But obviously, Salome was a mother who bonded with her children. And I think just by knowing what we know about James and John, and who was John, he was the beloved prophet. So James and John grew up, I would like to think, with a mother who nurtured them with all of her love. I think they grew up with a love for their mother that was unconditional. And as a mother, sometimes we tend to want to push our children in the direction that we think that they should go. We have high hopes and dreams and aspirations for our children, and we want to do whatever we can to help them achieve that goals. How many of you mothers have been successful in getting your children to achieve the goals that you wanted for them? Couple, a few, that's good. I remember telling my daughter when she was 14, 15, getting into academy, that was the time to start saying, you know, realizing that she was a very intelligent child, you can be anything you want to be. And I thought, okay, but I've got to give her a little direction here. Well, I wasn't going, you know, minimal. You can be a doctor. You know, you can be a scientist. You can be an astronaut if you want to. Whatever your heart desires, you are smart enough, and the world is open to education to you that you can do what you want to do. Well, my daughter graduated from academy. She piddled at college for a couple of years, didn't really do well with it, and at age 35, finally went to college online to get a degree in accounting. Nothing that I had ever imagined or dreamed, and certainly not in the way that I had imagined or dreamed. But you know what, mothers and fathers? Children are their own people. And there comes an age where we have to recognize that. We have to let them grow up and be who they are. What is it that they truly want to do in their hearts? What is it that they're gifted at? What are the gifts that we see that God has gifted them with? We must help them to become who they are and not what we want them to be. Well, Mother Salome here had two sons that she loved dearly. And they were followers of Jesus. And she loved Jesus. She was delighted they were followers of Jesus. But as with most of the people of this time, they had this misconception that Jesus, when he established his kingdom, he was going to do it on earth. But being the good mother and knowing that her sons were devoted to Jesus, she wanted to help make sure that they got their proper place in that kingdom. So she went with them. Now, we don't really know, by the way that I have read and studied this, whether the sons were going, "Mama, this is really what we want, and we want you to help us. You know, you can go to talk to Jesus because he will listen to you." Or did Mama say, "Now, boys, this is what I want to see happen for you, and I'm going to go talk to Jesus"? Don't really know. All we know is that all three of them went to Jesus, and the mother was the first one that speaks. And he says, "What is it that you want?" And she says, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." And Jesus says, "You don't know what you are asking." And Jesus said to them, "Can you drink the cup I am going to drink?" And the boys answered, or the men, "We can." So all three of them were there, mother and the two sons. Mother is asking. Jesus is saying, "Do you realize what it is you're asking?" And the men go, "Yes." Based on their perception and their knowledge at that time, they felt that they knew what they needed to do and they were up to the task. But then Jesus tells them that they don't really understand. And as we know, if you've studied the disciples, James and John, both of them suffered cruel deaths, cruel lives and cruel deaths. So this mother, Salome, was very much like the mother, Mary, who witnessed her son die in a terrible way. Salome, at some point, we don't know if, it doesn't say if she actually witnessed their death, but both of her sons witnessed a death for Jesus that was far different from what their early thoughts would be of what they would give to him. Did this mother realize at that time what she was asking of Jesus? That my sons sit at your right and your left in your kingdom? No, but she had their best interest at heart. She wanted what was best for her children. And she knew that they loved the Lord, and she wanted to make sure that he understood that as well. It's an interesting story for many of us mothers. How often do we want the best for our children, but sometimes we don't understand the big picture of what we want for them? Probably all too often. I remember, it's amazing, it's amazing when I come up here and speak that as much as I study and read the Bible, and there's so much that I don't know, and as often as there are so many stories that inspire me, Jesus has spoke most to me through my own personal experiences, and it's been no different with being a mother. And sometimes there are things that happen to our children that we don't understand. And I find myself thinking that I'm going to be real and vulnerable up here, but how much do you share? But if it's a testimony that can help, there are things that need to be shared. And so many of you have heard my conversion story of when my youngest son was beaten by a babysitter and there was a life and death situation. And that's actually when God spoke to me and I truly had a heart conversion. This same son, at age 19, managed to associate himself with some young men that he knew, kind of sort of related to one of them, and they were doing things that they should not be doing. And he knew that in the back of his mind, but he was struggling. He was struggling. And this was after many prior struggles. At age 14, he really started finding himself floundering in life. He wasn't doing well in school. He wasn't doing well at home. He was having these outbursts of anger that we didn't know where they were coming from. He didn't know where they were coming from. He lived with his grandmother for a while. He lived with his father for a while. He just kind of was lost. So he gets in with these group of men. He's living in another state. He's not at home. And then he calls and asks if he can come back home. Well, of course, we're delighted. Come back home. You know, you're not actually living the way that we want you to live, but what can we do to help get you on the right track? So he comes home, and he's getting a lot of calls from this other state. And finally, we're realizing that something's not right. And so we sit him down, my husband and I, and we talk to him. And we go, something's going on. We feel there's something you need to tell us. So out it comes. These other associates that he had gotten involved with had decided to go burglarize some homes. And the police were on to them. And that was the reason he left that state to come home, because he thought he might have a greater chance of not being caught if he wasn't in the same area anymore. We told him, you have to turn yourself in. If the police are after you, it's going to be harder if they have to track you down and find you. Turn yourself in. Now, you talk about something hard to do from a mother's perspective, to tell him to go to the police and turn himself in. But worse than that was, you did what? My child? How could you do that? I was devastated. But he's my child. I'm going to love him, and I'm going to help him through this. So he goes back to the other state, and he turns himself in. Because of this, the detective who'd been working on these series of burglaries said, I'm very proud of you, son. This will go good in your favor. The main person we're after is someone else in your group who has had a long string of history of problems before you got involved with them. And if you will help us get him, if you will testify, we'll go very easy on you. So, long story short, because he had committed a crime, he still had to be arrested. He had to go to court. We knew he would be arrested. I knew I would have to go bail him out of jail. And then he would have to go again to court and testify against this other person. Very, very scary experience if none of you have ever been through it. I went into this little jailhouse in this town, watched my son be called up front to speak before the judge. The judge, of course, gave him a guilty verdict, and sentencing would be at another time. He was taken back into the jail area where he was processed. And then I had to go pay his bond to get him out. I went into the jail, and I basically roamed until finally this policewoman came up to me and said, ma'am, can I help you with something? And I said, yes, I need to bail my son out of jail, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And she looked at me, and she said, is this the first time? And I said, yes. I just must have had this look on my face. And she said, I'm so sorry that no one has helped you. She said, we are so used to having the same offenders come in over and over again that we assume that everyone knows the process when they come in here. Broke my heart to think that. So she helped me lead me to where I needed to go and do what I needed to do. And my son came out. And I mean, he just had this look on his face of such relief, of thank you, Mom. Thank you for being here to help me. So a long story short, he had to go back again to court, like I said, to testify. Very interesting experience, again, if you've never been through it. I had no money to hire an attorney. He had to have a public defender, and then you're crossing your fingers that the public defender will actually work in your son's behalf and not say, I don't really care what happens. And then you get these instructions of what to do and what not to do when you walk before a judge. And I thought, wow, talk about another world. And he was instructed that when you walk before the judge, young man, you stand tall. You do not put your hands in your pockets. You keep your hands at your side at all times. When the judge addresses you, make sure that you say, yes, your honor, or no, your honor. You look directly at the judge. You do not look anywhere else. You do not speak unless you are spoken to. And all I could think was, wow, what a different world. You would think that's the end of the story. In a way it was, and in a way it wasn't. It was the end of the story in that he learned a valuable lesson. His mother had raised him right. That was not the path that he wanted to go down. He knew about God. He knew about right and wrong. And he knew that he had done a wrong, and he would not do that wrong ever again. So it was a turning point in his life to turn himself around. But because he was still so lost with who he was and where he was going, he was wandering. My youngest son was in the eighth grade at that time. And he was working at the same place that I worked when I was young. And they were having a fun day at this place, kind of like Six Flags. And his father usually went to those places with him because I don't ride rides. Well, his father ended up having to work that day, and here he is. He's so excited and eager to go ride the rides, and how can you look at your son and go, well, I'm not going with you? So I said, okay, come on, I'm going with you. You know, we're going to have a fun day. So off we go, and we get there, and what's the first thing he sees? Chang. Chang is a roller coaster that you stand in, and this harness thing comes up between your legs and catches you right here. And then you have a harness over your shoulder. And I'm looking at that going, sure, I can do this. So I said, come on, let's go. We go get on the ride. I'm psyching myself out. I can do this. I can do this. We get on that ride. And he's so excited. He's so happy. And all I can think of is, dear Lord, get me through this. Dear Lord, get me through this. So off it goes. And I didn't know this until after the ride, but if you really don't like rides, you should not close your eyes, keep your eyes open. That's what it is. There's something about closing your eyes that makes it worse. Well, I didn't know that. So I'm closing my eyes, and I'm just praying that the ride will hurry up and be over, and I'm feeling really sick, you know, and I'm just like, Lord, please don't let me throw up on this ride. Finally get through the ride, and he's like, oh, Mom, wasn't that awesome? Let's do it again. And I'm like, no, not going to happen. And then he stopped, and he looked at me, and he goes, Mom, are you okay? And I went, need to sit down for a minute. So we go, and I sit down, and I said, go over there and ride that ride, you know, by yourself. I'll just sit here for a minute. So he went off, and I'm going, I don't feel good. I just really don't feel good at all. So I went and got a Sprite. I thought, a Sprite will help me. So he rides this ride, and he comes back, and he goes, Mom, you don't look so good. And I'm going, yeah, I really, really do not feel good. And I said, I hate to do this. We're going to have to go home. I can't, I just feel really bad. And he's like, can you drive, Mom? He wasn't old enough to drive. Are you going to be able to drive? And I'm like, yeah, I think I can drive us home. So we go home, and I felt so bad. I'd ruined his day. You know, we go home. I'm sitting in the chair, and I mean, and everything is just, And I'm like, oh, when will this end? I mean, I just thought I was going to die. It was awful, awful. So I'm sitting there, just the room spinning, and the phone rings, and it's my other son. And I'm talking to him, and he's, you know, I go, Mom. And I could tell by the tone of his voice that something was wrong. And I'm just trying to get the room to quit spinning while I'm trying to listen to him. And he's like, Mom, I need you. And I'm like, what? What? Mom, it's bad. It's really bad. And I'm like, what is it? Mom, I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to live anymore. I just want to kill myself and be done with it. The room stopped spinning. I was on the phone with him for 3 hours, convincing him, you want to live. Please, please, you want to live. Telling him how much I loved him, telling him how much Jesus loved him. Just talking with him, just listening to him. And finally, he said, okay, it's okay. I'm going to be okay, Mom. I'm going to be okay. You talk about going from spinning room to heart throbbing. And at that moment, I could identify with Jesus in the garden. Little teeny tiny sad comparison. But Jesus in the garden, when he sweat drops of blood over what was being expected of him. My heart was breaking so bad for my son that I went from physically ill from a ride to physically ill in my soul. And I had to get down on my knees and pray. And I prayed all night long, God, give him the strength he needs to make it through this night. And he did. It wasn't years later until we look back and we can see how God has led. If I had not gotten sick on that ride to go home, I would not have been there when that son needed me. God loves us so much, and our children so much more than we can even imagine, that he has the plan. He knows. He knows where we need to be, when we need to be, and he invites us to listen and follow him so that he can guide in our lives and our children's lives. He loves us so much. And as I've looked back in life, not just personally, but as a mother, I can say, thank you, God, for all the times you were there to intervene when I didn't even realize it. Thank you, God, for the times you helped me to realize it and you drove me to my knees where I needed to be for my children. And I don't know if any of you parents have been in that experience, anything similar, but I know you know what it means to love your children more than anything else. And I know that's what Salome felt for her children. She loved them more than anything else. And Jesus was calling them. He had a special calling. And just like Jesus had a special calling, we mothers have a special calling. And I think it's the hardest calling of all. In the book, this is Women of the Bible. I love this book. It talks about Salome, and it says, in Salome's case, it didn't mean turning her back on her children, but surrendering them to God. So when God asked her, do you know what you're asking? It didn't mean just turning around and saying, okay, boys, this isn't going to happen. It meant surrendering them to God for whatever God was asking. It meant putting Jesus above everything and everyone and loving him better than her own sons. And only then would she understand the meaning of what they would suffer as followers of Christ. And only then would she really know how to pray. God's hardest calling for us as mothers is to give our children completely to God, that they may follow Him and whatever His calling is to them in their lives. And sometimes we just want to hang on a little bit. Sometimes we know a little better. Sometimes we have the answer, but we must give them over to God. And I can say from personal experience that from that time that God drove me to my knees with my oldest son, that's when I knew that this child was a child of God. I was his mother here on earth, and I would be his mother to the best of my ability. But his greatest asset was having God as his father, who loved him more than I could ever imagine and would be able to do more for him than I could ever possibly do. There is within most mothers an unconditional, almost desperate love for their child. And that's what we have. But I want to take it a step further before I close this morning. We've been called, all of us, women. Whether you are a mother by birth or not, we've all been called to be mothers for God's kingdom. Hillary Clinton says, "It takes a village to raise a child." And she's right. It takes a family. It takes a church family to help nurture and raise the children in our church. Mothers of the children need our help. It takes a community to help raise the children in our community. Where is our presence to these children in teaching them about the God that loves them? As I've grown older and my children grew older and had children of their own, again, I discovered that God gave me the opportunity to be a mother in other ways through my workplace. Most of you know that I work at Cajada Springs, and I work oftentimes with children that are young enough to be my children. And there was a young girl that I worked with for several years who became very close to me. I realized that I had the opportunity to be more than a boss to her, more than an employer to her. I had the opportunity to mentor to her. This particular young woman gave me a Mother's Day card. "Dear Sherry, just wanted to wish you a happy Mother's Day. Thanks for being so nice and kind to me." We have a calling beyond our own children. As special as our children are to us, God calls us to be mothers to all the children that we come into contact with, to teach all children about the love and goodness of Jesus. That's what we're called to do as mothers. It's an awesome job, but it's an awesome responsibility. I found this song. Actually, I found a couple of songs. I was trying to look for mother songs and mother's poems and things. And there was this poem, and I don't know if any of you can actually remember this. I know that many of you have heard the acronym for mother, Mother's Day. M is for the million things you gave me. O is for the others, blah, 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 blah. There was one that I had heard one time that was kind of a pun, and it went, "M is for the million things you gave me. O is for all the other things you gave me. T is for all those things you gave me." And the whole thing is about the things you gave me, because the person couldn't come up with something good to say. But the fact that they realized that their mother gave them everything, you know, "Mother, you gave me everything," was kind of comical. Anyway, I found this song, two songs actually, that I just love. And if you've never listened to them, you need to hear them. One of them was called, is sung by Martina McBride, and it's called "In My Daughter's Eyes." And again, being called mothers, we have a tendency to just look at how we're raising our children and trying to be the best mother. But there comes a point in life when you realize that your children, and for mothers especially our daughters, they are our legacy. And then it says here that "In my daughter's eyes, I am a hero. I am strong and wise. I know no fear. But the truth is plain to see that she was sent to rescue me. I see who I want to be in my daughter's eyes. And then it goes on, it says, in my daughter's eyes, I can see the future, a reflection of who I am and what will be. Though she'll grow and someday leave and maybe raise a family, when I'm gone, I hope you see how happy she made me, for I'll be there in my daughter's eyes. Our children are our legacy. This one, though, I really love because it's very true to so many of us. Somebody's hero. She never pulled anyone from a burning building. She's never rocked Central Park to a 500,000 fans screaming out her name. She's never hit a shot to win the game, and she's never left her footprints on the moon. She's never made a solo hot air balloon ride around the world. Nope, she's just an everyday average girl. But she's somebody's hero, a hero to her baby with the skinned up knee. A little kiss is all she needs. She's the keeper of the Cheerios, the voice that brings Snow White to life at bedtime stories every night, the smile that lets her know she's somebody's hero. She's somebody's hero, a hero to her daughter in her wedding dress. She gave her wings to leave the nest. It hurts to let the baby go and walk down the aisle, but she looks back in her mother's eyes, and that smile lets her know that she's somebody's hero. And it goes on and on. But our children are our legacy, mothers. So as we raise them, don't think of what we just want for them, for us, but think of them as what they will be someday when we were gone. They will be the legacy that we leave behind, our children. Will they be the legacy that speaks of God's love? Something to think about. Shall we bow our heads in prayer? Dear Heavenly Father, this morning we thank you so much as mothers for the privilege that you have given us. It is an awesome responsibility. Mothers are so special in so many ways. And I pray for every mother that is in this sanctuary this morning, that they will be lifted up before you to see the value of the responsibility that they have been given, not just only to our own children, dear Father, but to children that we come into contact with. We want to raise our children to grow up to know what is right and to do what is right, but most importantly, we want to raise our children to know you, Lord, to know that you love them, and to be willing to give their lives to you and to follow you. This is our greatest desire, dear Father, and I believe as Salome, her greatest desire was that her children would be with her in heaven with Jesus, and that's our desire as well. So give us the strength, give us the wisdom, give us the guidance that we need for those of us that still have young children at home, and for those of us that have older children who have already made their way into the world. Let us to always continue to be the one that they can come to, knowing that it is a safe place. The one they know will always love them no matter what. And the one that can give them encouragement to be who they are, a child of God. These things I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.